Wednesday, February 24th, 2021. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. Of course, I told you last week it was freezing in Denver, Colorado. Well, it warmed up here at least a little bit. Got up above like 30 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a good thing. Got a little bit of snow, but nothing too big, and maybe we're going to start thawing out and getting ready for spring. Yeah, that's not coming anytime soon. Not for us here. Maybe where you're at, maybe spring is coming soon. It's not coming here. We still have our heavy snow season coming here in Colorado. But we are back for another week of talking sports this week with a dose of common sense. Happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope that you and your family and your friends are staying healthy, getting some good news. Virus numbers are dropping. And yes, we had to endure a little bit of cold. Hopefully you are staying warm wherever it is that you are today. But we are happy to have you here with us today. We have a couple of birthdays that we need to wish today. Because it was back on February 24th in 1938 that American billionaire, businessman, and co-founder and chairman of Nike Incorporated, Phil Knight, was born in Portland, Oregon. Now, in 2020, Phil Knight was ranked by Forbes magazine as the 26th richest person on the planet Earth. He had an estimated net worth of $39.2 billion with a B dollars. Now here's the thing. I realize today is Phil Knight's birthday. Cool. Happy birthday to Phil. But if I'm him, I literally need to be sending Michael Jordan a card today. Because if I'm Phil Knight, I need to be sending Michael Jordan a card every single day of my life, because do not ever forget, Nike was this goofy little track shoe until they signed some kid from North Carolina. But happy 83rd birthday to Phil Knight. Get that card in the mail for Mike, because you want to make sure you keep that guy happy. Also on February 24th, back in 1977, American boxer Floyd Mayweather was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, Floyd is a five-time weight division world champion. He has won a record 26 consecutive wins in world title fights. 10 of those were by knockout. He has an undefeated record at 50-0. And there are many so-called experts who now talk about Floyd Mayweather being pound for pound in the conversation as one of the greatest fighters of all time. I mean, I don't buy it. But make no mistake, Floyd is one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time. I mean, if the name of the game in boxing is to hit your opponent and also to not get hit yourself, then yes, Floyd Mayweather is really, really good at that, because he rarely gets touched. When you think back to Floyd Mayweather's career, not only does he have that undefeated record, it's not like you sit there and say, well, remember in this fight he was hurt? Like, you can literally name the times Floyd has even been hurt on one hand. Marcos Maidana caught Floyd and stunned him for a few brief seconds. Carlos Hernandez hit Floyd with a body shot. He had to take a knee. Zab Judah caught Floyd, staggered him for a second. He actually put some real pressure on him in that fight, but as usual, couldn't finish the job. Demarcus Corley wobbled Floyd for a few seconds, also couldn't finish the job. Shane Mosley actually had Floyd in some big trouble early on, but again, as usual, Floyd Mayweather rallied and used his great, great defensive skills to wear down his opponents, and he eventually beat them. Floyd, without question, is one of the greatest defensive fighters ever. Having said that, don't forget Floyd has a record of only fighting fighters either well past their prime or well before their prime. Because when you hear names like Zab Judah, or Shane Mosley, or Miguel Cotto, or Arturo Gatti, or Manny Pacquiao, or, of course, Canelo Alvarez, it sounds like a really, really impressive resume for Floyd, doesn't it? Except that when he fought Zab, and Shane, and Manny, and Cotto, and Arturo, they were all not just on the backside of their careers, but he usually scheduled them after they had sustained a major, major devastating loss in their career. So it wasn't a coincidence that he took it. And of course, he did fight Canelo. Remember, Canelo Alvarez was 23 years old when Floyd beat him, and beat him in a much closer fight than people think. But Canelo wasn't experienced enough to beat him. Floyd also has a record of fighting a lot of, well, very average fighters. So for that reason, I can't put him in the upper echelon. He can't be in the echelon with the Robinsons or the Lewis or Ali or the Henry Armstrongs, Willie Pep. Those kind of guys are at a different level. He doesn't have that resume. He hasn't fought good enough fighters in their prime to put him up there. But, I mean, maybe he can be like a few notches under those guys, I guess. I will say this. Floyd Mayweather is great at promoting his fights. Because think about it. He could fight Conor McGregor and people bought it. He could fight Manny Pacquiao, who was like 50 with like a broken hand and a shoulder that wouldn't work. And people were like, oh, I got to tune in. Because Floyd got you to believe that he just might lose. Talked a lot of trash. Hey, I just might lose this fight. And people bought in and they gave him all of their money. And of course, Floyd won again and took all of their money. Also, Floyd is really, really good at posting when he bets and wins money on sporting events. But I have noticed one thing about him doing that. We never, ever hear about when Floyd loses. And understand this. In sports betting, no one wins every time. Not even Floyd Mayweather. Hey, happy 44th birthday to Floyd Mayweather. I'm just not quite sure you win as much as you act like you do. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show and maybe tell us, I don't know, only about the bets that you won and not the 50 other times you lost, I mean, we're not going to believe you, but we would still love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com, or feel free to go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosports. Maybe you've just got a quick question. Hey, I was wondering about this team. I was wondering about this trade. I was wondering about this player. Feel free to reach out to us. We do hear from a number of you, either through email or through our social media accounts. We'll always take the time to get you an answer. And sometimes we might end up using what it is that you send us on the show. Plus, I mean, if you need a little advice, where else would you go? We've handed out some great, great advice on the Dose before. And hey, as long as you're doing that online shopping that we know everyone is still doing, make sure you stop by tpublic.com, pick up some Daily Dose gear that you need. We have a few newer designs over there that I think you're going to like. We have our Daily Dose football and basketball designs. And if you're picking out clothing, a hoodie, a t-shirt, a sweatshirt, you can pick out the color that you want. But we've got a number of items over there as well. We've got cell phone covers, laptop covers, coffee mugs. You need a new coffee mug? You know you're just sitting at home, working from home. You might need a coffee mug for the desk. Make sure you go over and you pick out a Daily Dose one with the Daily Dose logo that you like. Stop by tpublic.com and get that shopping done. Hey, today on the show, well, right now, we actually have a little bit of a lull in sports because the Super Bowl is over. The NFL is over, and we have a little bit of time before basketball fully takes off. But do you realize that Selection Sunday for the NCAA basketball tournament is now less than 3 weeks away? And you know, here's the thing. I don't think most people are paying attention that much to college hoops just yet. But we are going to start prepping a little bit for the tournament, at least a little bit, because then it's going to give you an advantage when you are filling out those March Madness brackets because they're going to be here before you know it. Plus, we do have a very interesting, very educational Daily Dose Top 5 for you today. If you have always hoped that you could go play in the NBA someday, I might be able to help you out a little bit today. But before we get to any of that, we do have some sports news that has come out over the past week. We need to discuss a few of the big stories. Of course, the biggest sports news right now is that golf star Tiger Woods was injured Tuesday in a single vehicle rollover in Los Angeles County. Woods had to be extricated from the vehicle with the Jaws of Life tools. That's never a good sign. And they say he sustained multiple leg injuries and had to undergo surgery yesterday, but that the injuries he sustained are actually not life-threatening. They are listing him in stable condition. The vehicle took on major damage, airbags appeared to be deployed, and the wreckage looked like it was just off the side of a road on kind of a hillside, and it had some big-time damage. Apparently, the crash occurred shortly before 7:15 a.m. on Tuesday. That is what officials have said. So, I know I shouldn't ask this, but, like, I kind of have to ask this, right? You were just going to the range at 7 a.m., right? Like, you weren't just getting home. They are saying alcohol was not involved, but they haven't said anything about any other substances. Man, I hope there were no other substances at play. Really, really hoping Tiger Woods is able to overcome these injuries. Hopefully he is able to return soon, but that's a bad situation. And I'm just hoping it was legitimately just an accident. Another one of the biggest stories over the past week, of course, was over in the NFL, where the Philadelphia Eagles have now traded quarterback Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts for a 2021 third-round draft pick and a conditional 2022 second-round draft pick that could turn into a first-round draft pick. Now, the Eagles will receive the 85th overall pick in this year's draft, but that conditional second-rounder next year can become a first-round pick based on what Carson Wentz does in Indianapolis. If Wentz plays at least 75% of the Colts' offensive snaps, then the 2022 conditional pick bumps up to a first rounder. Now, the Eagles have to take a $34 million cap hit for dealing Wentz. That is actually the largest dead cap hit that any team has ever taken for any player in history. But the Colts are going to assume the balance of Wentz's $128 million contract extension, including that $10 million guaranteed roster bonus that will be due next month. So here's the thing. What does this trade mean to both teams? Because remember this. Keep in mind what the Colts have had at quarterback for the past few seasons. I mean, back in 2016, they had Andrew Luck. Pretty good. 2017, Luck was hurt and they had Jacoby Brissett. 2018, they had Andrew Luck back, but he was all banged up and not playing so well. 2019, it was back to Jacoby Brissett. And then in 2020, they had Philip Rivers. And now in 2021, they are going to have Carson Wentz. Well, if Carson Wentz is capable of playing well, then this is a good deal for the Indianapolis Colts, because you can see they've struggled having a good quality quarterback year in, year out. And remember, this trade reunites Carson Wentz with Colts head coach Frank Reich. Reich, you might not realize, was his offensive coordinator back in 2017. You know, back when Wentz was actually good. So, if there is someone that can revive his career, Frank Reich should probably be the guy, right? Also remember that the Indianapolis Colts have some talent on that team. They have a very good offensive line. They have a running back that could be a star in Jonathan Taylor, and they still have a significant amount of money to even go get more pieces to surround Carson Wentz with. So the Indianapolis job might be the best quarterback job for Carson Wentz in the entire league, not even close. But here's the biggest question that I have in this trade. Is Carson Wentz broken? And we can all say no, he's just had bad talent around him. Very possible. He hasn't had much up in Philly. He's been under constant pressure. He hasn't had great wide receivers to throw to. Sometimes, even when he did throw to him, they, you know, dropped the ball.
We was catching him, unlike Aguilar.
But in the history of the NFL, I mean, we've seen quarterbacks get broken because they just got beat up so much. Think of guys like David Carr. He was never the same. Even Philip Rivers. Yes, gritty, gutty, but just probably threw way too many interceptions because he has been beat up so much. Even Donovan McNabb, late in his career, he started to just want to get rid of the ball. And after a while, we have seen these guys get kind of gun-shy because they've been hit so much and they just start regressing. Now, over the past few seasons, Carson Wentz has regressed hard. He has been so reckless with the football. He just wants to get rid of it. And I'm not talking about, you know, Patrick Mahomes going out there and throwing up a ball that maybe has a chance, even though he's kind of just flinging it up there. Carson Wentz is just throwing into coverage. He's just throwing interceptions. That would concern me. Can he change that mentality? Or is it just so embedded into him that he's kind of broken? That is going to be what we need to watch. And you know what's going to be funny? We're not going to see it in week one, week two. We're going to have to wait until like week 10, week 12, until we truly get a read on how Carson Wentz is doing. Meanwhile, on the other side, now what do the Philadelphia Eagles do? I mean, are they all in on Jalen Hurts? I know last year there were some complaints when they pulled Jalen Hurts. I don't know that he was lighting the world on fire. He was okay at times. I would think that even if they are all in on Jalen Hurts, they still need to go get a good, solid veteran to kind of support him and kind of be there for him and kind of walk him through this process. But here's the more important question that I have for the Philadelphia Eagles. Do the Eagles now go draft a quarterback at number 6? Because that's where they're drafting, and there will be guys available. Yes, Trevor Lawrence will be off the board. But will there be another quarterback there that they do like? Or would the Eagles even be looking at maybe trading up to go get a quarterback? Maybe go get a Justin Fields. Maybe go get a Zach Wilson. Here's the only problem I have with that. The Eagles have so many needs on that team. Going into this next season, it is going to be really, really interesting to watch which needs the Philadelphia Eagles are prioritizing, because they need to address a lot of things. You got rid of that big contract. Wentz is gone. But now, what are you going to go get to replace him? Let's move over to college football. We haven't talked about it a whole lot here in the Dose. But of course, the NCAA has retooled the transfer rule for athletes over the past few years. And as usual, it sounds like they're helping kids. And as usual, the adults are screwing things up for the kids. And I don't know if we've ever seen evidence of that more so than this past year. So the NCAA has actually granted football players an extra year of eligibility because of the whole pandemic thing. Well, that sounds great. That sounds fair, right? Plus, players can now transfer without having to sit out a year. Also, great. Hey, coaches do it. Coaches quit one job and take another job the next day. And there's no suspension period. There's no probation period. They do it all the time. So why shouldn't players be able to do it? Well, it sounds good, but it isn't really working so well for some reason. So far, according to the Coach and Coordinator podcast, an astounding, and I mean, this is a big number, 72% of the players that are in the 2021 transfer portal to go to a different school, they don't have a new school that wants them. Out of 1,074 players that are in the portal right now, only 299 actually have a school that has given them a scholarship to go play on for this next season. And most of the ones that are actually getting those deals, they're having to drop down a level. So maybe from FBS to FCS, or maybe from FBS to even Division II or even to junior college. This isn't good for kids. I know that we closed schools and we shut down college football, and I know we did all that stuff for the kids, right? That's what we were told. Got to keep the kids safe because they were in so much danger from actually not really getting sick, or actually not even knowing they had a virus unless we tested them and told them they had the virus. We had to close down because it was super dangerous for them. But I'm telling you right now, we are just beginning to see the damage that we are going to be doing to a lot of young people's lives. Here's the other thing to keep in mind. You're going to have a logjam at some of these schools because a lot of them have given an extra year of eligibility to these kids. Well, new freshmen are still coming in. Where does everyone go? There are going to be a ton of players just saying, I'm getting lost in the shuffle throughout this whole mess. Again, most times when adults get involved in kids' stuff, they usually tend to do the worst possible thing for kids. Finally, speaking of stupid things in this world, NBA executives would like to have themselves an All-Star game this year, despite the fact that the players in the league are hell-bent against having one. Last week, the NBA announced the NBA All-Star 2021 is going to be held Sunday, March 7th. It will be at State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, home of the Atlanta Hawks, where the league's annual global celebration of the game will take place on just one single night. It won't be the full weekend. They will have on-court action beginning at like 4:30 Mountain Standard Time on TNT, and what is traditionally a weekend full of events, it'll be slimmed down to just one day. They won't have all the parties, all the fan activities, all that kind of stuff. They won't even have the games for the rookies and sophomores this year. They will have the skills challenge. They will have a three-point shooting contest that will take place before the All-Star game, and then the slam dunk contest will actually occur at halftime of the All-Star game. Now, according to the league's collective bargaining agreement, players must participate in the All-Star game festivities if they are selected, unless they are specifically excused by Commissioner Adam Silver. And of course, as you can imagine, from a league full of players that doesn't really like being told what to do, the players are not pleased with this whole All-Star thing. In fact, earlier this month, Los Angeles Lakers forward LeBron James, the NBA's biggest, highest profile star, said that holding the game would be a slap in the face, and that he personally had zero energy and zero excitement for the game. It wasn't just LeBron. Portland Trailblazers superstar Damian Lillard was also not pleased. He had this to say, "A lot of players are saying, why are we even having a game? And I understand that. If they said, we're not going to have a game, I'd be perfectly fine with it. I just had two newborns, and I would love to spend that extra time at home with my family." Hey, it must be rough for these guys to have to go play in this All-Star game. You're playing along in the season. You're not in a bubble now, so you're having to deal with outside things. To have this weekend off and not get to go home with your family, I mean, that's got to be tough. I mean, to get paid millions of dollars to go play what is basically a glorified pickup game of basketball, I mean, that's got to be hard. Hey, health workers and military personnel and, I don't know, like coal miners, oil drillers, stand clear, because the NBA players have to play a pickup game of basketball. And in that All-Star game, it will be completely in a bubble. They will be staying at five-star hotels, eating lobster, and not having any face-to-face contact with the public whatsoever. And then, when it's done, I'll call my shot right now, they will tell us what heroes they are in the process. You know, when the NBA playoffs have their worst ratings in history, yeah, for some reason, people don't want to watch these players. They don't want to watch a lot of their nonsense. Super weird, right? Like when you hear these players talk about, we have to go play an All-Star game. Oh my God, I just want to go home and spend time with my family. I haven't been home since like last night. But do you know why the NBA is trying to have this All-Star game? Because they need to drum up some business. Because this past year hasn't just been down a little. It hasn't just been a slight dip. It has been historically bad. It's been one of the worst seasons in the history of the NBA. Remember when the players and the coaches and the league got all political and they said, we don't care if the public likes it or not. This is our stand. Okay, well, then now you gotta do an All-Star game. Remember when the ratings for the finals were in the toilet? And again, you acted like, who cares? It's just a COVID year. It's just a weird year. It's no big deal. It's just bubble basketball. Again, this is why you're having to have an All-Star game. Because you've had such a horrible year, you've gotta try to drum up some business. Business is not good for the NBA right now. And as a result, they've got to go out and they've got to peddle their wares a little bit. What's the old saying? You reap what you sow.
That's what you get. That's what you get.
Yeah, the NBA is reaping a little bit of what they have sown over the past couple of years. Hey, coming back, March Madness is coming fast. Here's the question for you. Are you watching any college hoops yet? Probably not, because it seems like most people haven't started watching the college game just yet. But When we get back, we are going to begin to prepare at least a little bit for the coming tournament. You know, this might be a great year for you to sneak in and win that office bracket challenge. We are going to be doing our best today to help you out with that. We're going to get to that when we get back. So do you realize that March Madness Selection Sunday is already coming on March 14th? Hey, that's less than 3 weeks away. The first round of the NCAA tournament will be March 19th and 20th. Of course, that goofy first four nonsense gets started before that. Then the second round will be March 21st and 22nd. I'm telling you, kids, the tournament is coming fast. But here's the problem for most sports fans. Last year, March Madness got canceled completely. And this year, I think we've all been a little bit slow to go back to watching college basketball because we're all kind of worried, are they just going to do it again? And honestly, no one really watches the regular season in college basketball anyway. We never do because we just start to tune in a little bit once the conference tournaments start. And then we kind of scramble to do our best to figure out, okay, who's who? Is this team actually good? Is this team terrible? Who's actually the big dog? Who's actually a team that could sneak in? We kind of want to know who is who so that we can fill out our brackets correctly. Because ultimately, March Madness is about winning our office pool, right? Of course it is. Well, right now, what we are going to do is we are going to bring you kind of maybe the Cliff Notes version of what has been going on in college basketball. Because like a sap, since the NFL ended, I have started to watch a lot of college hoops. But here's the thing, like everything else kind of going on in 2020 and 2021, college basketball is a little bit weird right now. Not necessarily bad, but it's a little bit different. Let's start off with the top teams because one of the things we know we're going to hear about over the next few weeks is which teams are going to get the coveted number one seed. And a lot of times, we look at the number one seed and we go, okay, great. You got the one, you got the two. Big deal. Big difference. No, it's a huge difference. Because the one seed eventually will play either an 8-9, where the two seed in the second round could be facing a number seven that could be really, really dangerous. Getting those top seeds can be a monster advantage. Which four teams are going to get those top seeds in the tournament this year? Well, it won't be the usual Duke, North Carolina, or Kentucky. We may have to talk about those teams a little bit later, but right now, if we were picking the teams that are going to find themselves on the number one line in this year's 2021 NCAA tournament, it might look a little bit different than it usually does. Because the top seed in the tournament, I would say with like 90% certainty, is going to be the Gonzaga Bulldogs. The Zags have rolled through their season undefeated, and I know, they play in the Big West. So of course they go undefeated. The Big West, aside from maybe BYU, there's not that much talent. There's a couple teams that are kind of sneaky, couple of teams that, well, they're okay, they could shoot a little bit. But the Big West is the Big West. How great does Gonzaga have to be to win that conference? But do not forget, Gonzaga also beat Kansas, West Virginia, Auburn, Iowa, and Virginia, and they didn't just beat them. They beat them all pretty easily. The Zags average 93 points per game. They're just shredding people this year. If there is a big dog favorite in college basketball this year, it's Gonzaga, and it's not even close. Do you realize they recently blew out five straight opponents? Okay, they're in the Big West, big deal. All five of those games were on the road. It doesn't even bother Gonzaga to go on the road. They'll go on the road and crush you too. The biggest question for Gonzaga that I have is what are they going to do in their conference tournament? Do they rest people? Do they risk injury by playing everyone and trying to keep it rolling? Either way, the Gonzaga Bulldogs should easily be the top team in this year's tournament. Expect it because it's coming. The second number one seed that is going to be coming out in a few weeks is most likely going to be coming from the Big 12. But it's not going to be Kansas. And it's not going to be Texas Tech. No, it's going to be the Baylor Bears. they are also rolling along and beating teams, and Baylor is kind of like Gonzaga. In fact, these two teams were scheduled to play each other, and the game had to be canceled, but Baylor can score some serious points too. They average 87 points per game. And again, Baylor has beaten some really, really strong teams. They've beaten Texas. They've beaten Illinois, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Kansas. The difference for me between Baylor and Gonzaga, Baylor is going to be tested more playing in their conference, but Baylor also does run the risk of losing in their Big 12 tournament. So they could get into their tournament and get knocked out, and then you say, well, are they still a number one seed? Where I think Gonzaga can stroll through the Big West without an issue. But I think with the resume that they've had all season, the Baylor Bears are still going to get a number one seed. So we have two more number one seeds to go, and I actually believe that both of them are probably going to be awarded to Big Ten teams. Told you a few weeks ago, the Big Ten is stacked. I think the Michigan Wolverines are going to get the nod for that third number one seed, unless, I mean, there's some crazy collapse or some sort of injury or something. You know, it took a while for Michigan head coach Juwan Howard to get a head coaching job, yet he's proving to be really, really good back at his alma mater, and those Michigan Wolverines are a load. You know, we've talked about this before on The Dose, but I really do think there is some bias that goes on against guys that are trying to get head coaching jobs. No, it's not a racial bias. It's a size bias. A lot of people think, well, big men can't be coaches. You got to go get a point guard. You got to go get your, like, Steve Kerrs. Those are the coaches. Juwan Howard is proving a big man can be a really, really good coach. His team is playing so tough. Of course, Michigan missed a number of games for COVID, but they play such a physical brand of basketball. Just this past Sunday, they came back to beat Ohio State in Columbus, and that was a battle. You want to talk about two teams getting physical, hitting each other in the mouth, and Michigan came out on top. They've got size. They play defense. They're pretty smart. And one of the biggest keys for the Michigan Wolverines, they have a few players that are experienced. They have a few players that have gone through some tough times up in Ann Arbor. They kind of know what this is about. That makes Michigan a very, very dangerous team. Hey, they can win the whole thing. They are that good. The final number one seed this year in the tournament, I think probably also goes to the Big Ten. And I would probably right now give that to the Ohio State Buckeyes. I've tuned in a few times to watch Ohio State. I watched them play Indiana. I watched them beat Penn State. And of course, I did watch that loss to Michigan on Sunday. But one of the things that stands out to me when I watch Ohio State, their head coach, Chris Holtmann, he's really, really good at taking away your best options. So if your biggest thing that you want to do is we want to go out and we want to get our big man involved, we want to feed him the ball in the post, we want him to go to work. Well, Ohio State's not going to let you do that. You're going to have to do something else because they're not going to let you do that. If you really like getting out and running and pushing the pace, well, then he's going to slow it down. You can't do what you like to do against the Ohio State Buckeyes. And the other thing that makes Ohio State so dangerous, and they could be really dangerous in this tournament, is their efficiency. They rarely take bad shots. They rarely just turn it over through an unforced error. The Ohio State Buckeyes shoot over 50% from two-point range on offense. They get points on nearly every single possession. And again, that makes them extremely dangerous going into the tournament. Of course, we know that sometimes it's not just the number one seeds. In fact, during most tournament seasons, the teams that a lot of times make the most noise are the twos, the threes, the fours. There are other teams out there this year that are more than capable of making a very deep run into the dance. And I'm not necessarily talking about like the dark horse teams, like the teams that we don't know. We know a Cinderella is going to come out of a small conference. We know we're going to have some shocking upset. I'm not talking about them just yet. I'm talking about the teams that are going to be on that second, third, fourth line of the bracket, because a lot of times they kind of sneak through quietly and they upset those number one teams, and they can make a run all the way to the Final Four, all the way to the championship. A few teams you might want to kind of keep in the back of your mind as we get closer to March Madness. We talked about it just a few minutes ago. The Big Ten is absolutely stacked this year. They can easily get 9, 10, maybe even 11 teams into this tournament, they have a very good chance of getting two number ones in Ohio State and in Michigan. But one team that is just maybe a shade behind those teams is the Illinois Fighting Illini. And they are right there. They are a contender in this tournament as well. They have one of the top players in the country in Io Dosunmu. This kid can score. He can shoot. He can pass. He's kind of an interesting player because he's pretty long, but he's deceptively fast. He'll be dribbling. He uses his change of speed really well. And all of a sudden, he'll just explode past you and get to the rim. I'm telling you right now, Dosunmu is going to be a Wooden finalist. And with that kind of talent, he is going to make Illinois really, really fun to keep an eye on. Watch Illinois. It is going to sound crazy. It's going to sound like something you're not going to believe that the host of the Daily Dose is going to say. But the Pac-12 has a couple of decent teams this year.
What?
And I think the best of the bunch is probably Southern California. The Trojans' Evan Mobley is another spectacular player. He is the best freshman in the country. And here's the thing that I think could separate USC. They play really, really tough defense. We know in a six-game tournament, sometimes you have a cold shooting night. Sometimes on offense, things just don't quite click. But most times, if you bring effort, your defense can kind of carry you on some of those nights. Now, I do worry a little bit about USC's strength of schedule. The Pac-12 is not stacked. And I also worry a little bit about the fact that a team from the state of California could be ordered back under their beds at any second. But USC is a team that you might want to keep an eye on down the stretch because they could possibly make some noise in this tournament. When we think of the Southeastern Conference in basketball, we typically think of two teams. I mean, the Kentucky Wildcats have all that history. And while they're kind of trying to make some sort of a push for the tournament this year, I don't think they're even going to make it. And then you have the Florida Gators, who racked up a few titles over the past decade or so. Now, Florida should make it in. We'll see how they do when they get there. But this year, it's neither one of those two teams that is the class of the SEC. This year, it is the Alabama Crimson Tide. And no, I'm not talking about football. I'm telling you, Alabama can play. And again, they're doing it with defense. Alabama allows just 70 points per game in a conference that can score a little bit. And while sometimes their offense can tend to struggle, they can score when they're shooting the ball well. So if they can shut you down and they can generate enough points, yeah, you might be in trouble against Alabama. It's going to sound weird, but we might hear Roll Tide being yelled during basketball season because Alabama is no joke. I've got two more teams that I will put here as teams that could be contenders. They're probably not the big dog favorites, but I think you have to at least account for them. And these two teams are very, very similar. They both play really tough defense. They both have great coaches. And they both have won national championships over the past few years. The Villanova Wildcats and the Virginia Cavaliers, they have had some recent stumbles in their season. They have both lost a couple games that they probably shouldn't lose, but I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't count either of them out this year. Virginia, no, they're not what they were, you know, a few years ago when they won it all, but they can still shut you down defensively. And the biggest difference that I see this year in Virginia is their offense is actually a little bit better than usual. The defense, not as good, still good. But the offense, they can score a little bit this year. And defensively, when you watch Virginia, you're not going to see the smothering, pressing kind of stuff that sometimes you think of with Tony Bennett teams. But what you will see, and what they are so good at it, is they contest every single shot. And for some magic reason, you might be a great shooting team. When you play against Virginia, your shots just don't go in. I know, usually teams just go, oh yeah, we just didn't shoot it that well that night. No, they had something to do with it. It had a little bit to do with Virginia contesting every shot and also not giving you any easy baskets. Don't count out Virginia. I know they lost over this past weekend. I think Virginia is still going to be dangerous. And Villanova is once again the top team in a very, very deep and very, very good Big East Conference. Hey, Jay Wright, he has himself another very good shooting team. We know Villanova teams like to shoot a little bit. This team can do that. We know Villanova teams will always play tough, hard-nosed basketball. My concern for Villanova is they don't always play as hard defensively as we're kind of used to with Jay Wright teams. And that is why we have seen the Wildcats stumble this year when they have. But make no mistake, Villanova is tough. They are tested playing in a good conference. And the Villanova Wildcats can play with anyone in the country. Now, one thing, like I said, we didn't really get to today. I want to wait on it just a little bit. Because before I talk about it, I want to see which teams are going to make a push into this tournament from some of the smaller conferences. You know, as we reach those conference tournaments, sometimes you'll get an upset. And then a really good team that truly deserves to be in the dance, they get left out because we know the NCAA committee is only going to take one team from that conference. So if you got beat, yeah, you're out. But we know this year in 2021, there will once again be Cinderella teams that will sneak up on everyone. They will ruin brackets. They will steal a few wins. They will hit a few buzzer beaters. I just want to kind of wait a few more weeks so we kind of have a better idea of who's actually going to get there. But I can tell you this. I have watched a couple of teams that you might want to kind of keep in the back of your mind. And as we're going into conference tournaments here in the next few weeks, you might want to try to watch a few of these teams. The Creighton Blue Jays are no joke. That Creighton team is extremely dangerous because they can shoot the heck out of it from three-point range. If I was playing Creighton as a coach, I would be very, very nervous because you can go out, you can play pretty good, and all of a sudden, they rain this barrage of threes on you, and they run off 18, 21 points, and you're going, what just happened? We were just in control. And all of a sudden, not only are we not in control, we're getting blown out. Creighton is a sneaky team you might want to watch. I have watched Loyola Chicago play a little bit this year. And once again, with that Loyola Chicago team, they are highly disciplined. They are so much fun to watch. In fact, I've actually made my daughter watch that team. Their offense comes down. They run some motion stuff, and it is sharp, precise passes, highly accurate, and they keep the ball moving. But what they also do, they force you to play defense for 20, 25, 30 seconds sometimes at a time, and they wear you out. So then you go down to the offensive end, and for some reason, again, you start missing some shots that you usually make. Yeah, not an accident. It's because you don't have the legs that you did have because the Loyola Chicago Ramblers have worn you out. One other team to kind of keep in mind as we get close, a little bit of a smaller name, but the Belmont Bruins are a team that knows how to win games. They have some experience. They are just waiting to get to the NCAA tournament and let everyone know how good they actually are. Now, like I said, as we get a little bit closer, we may have to talk about some of those teams that are a little more under the radar that could have you looking like a hero in your office pool bracket because you had the foresight to pick them to win a few games. As we get a little closer, we'll let you know who some of those teams might be. Okay, coming back, we've talked about the number one seeds. We've talked about some of the sneaky contenders, and we've even talked about maybe a couple of teams that might be below most everyone's radar. But when we come back, we want to talk about which teams are on the bubble for this tournament. We've got some teams that might actually surprise you. Plus, we still need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, it's not just college basketball. High school basketball tournaments are nearly here in some states that are actually playing high school sports. But here's a question. Which high school teams have had some incredible success? Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is going to bring you a bit of an educational top five. You'll see what we mean when we get back. So as we finish out our early look at the NCAA tournament that is coming quickly, we know that one of the things that we watch every year is which teams just barely get in and which teams have that bubble popped and have to sit there on live TV just completely devastated as someone else got their bid instead. So, which teams are on the bubble right now? Well, I'm not going to name all of them, but we've got a few bubble teams that might actually surprise you a little bit when you find out they are on the bubble if you haven't been watching a lot of college hoops. And probably the biggest surprise is that the Duke Blue Devils find themselves on the bubble. Because Mike Krzyzewski's squad started off this year so slow that if you remember, Coach K was saying he thought the season should be canceled. Well, somehow, Duke has kind of gotten going a little bit lately. They are starting to hit their stride. Now, one thing that's kind of interesting, I don't think it's a coincidence that they are starting to play better after one of their stars, Jalen Johnson, announced he was going to opt out for the remainder of the season so that he could focus on getting ready for the NBA draft. Yeah, go hire a trainer to get you ready for the NBA draft. We all know Coach K knows nothing about getting his kids ready for the NBA draft. Hey, I get it. You don't want to get hurt. Just say that. Don't say you're focusing on getting ready for the draft. Because playing at Duke would probably get you ready for the NBA draft. I think Coach K might know something about that. But now we are seeing the Dukies kind of bonding together and trying to make a run and make it into the dance because they have picked up a few big wins. They knocked off Virginia on Saturday. But it is going to be very interesting to see, can Duke now keep this rolling? Can they play their way into a spot in the NCAA tournament? We're not used to seeing that. But they've got to win some games or they're not going to get there. Now, this year, the tournament is going to be held at schools in Indiana, in the Indianapolis region. And when you hear that, you might think, well, I mean, how many schools are there? There are a few universities in Indianapolis. Obviously, the Pacers are there. But don't forget, the state of Indiana has some of the biggest high school gymnasiums in the world. That's how big basketball is in Indiana. But with the tournament going to be played in Indiana, wouldn't it be like a little bit weird if the home team doesn't get invited? Well, the Indiana Hoosiers are in big danger of not making the field because every time the Indiana wins a big game and they've had a couple of big wins, they start to look like a tournament team. And then it seems like Archie Miller's team loses a game they shouldn't lose and they take this giant step backwards. I mean, this year, Indiana beats number 4 Iowa. That's a great win. And then they lose to Rutgers. Now, Rutgers isn't terrible by any stretch. They might be a tournament team. But if you want to get into the tournament, if you're Indiana, you can't lose to Rutgers. We see Indiana play an out-of-conference game where they beat Stanford. Stanford, again, might be a tournament team. They beat Butler. And then they lose to Northwestern. Now, maybe that's just conference teams knowing how to play each other. But the Indiana Hoosiers will need a very strong finish. They will need a pretty good run in the Big Ten tournament, or Indiana is going to be watching games that are being played, you know, right down the street, but they're going to have to be watching them on TV because they're not going to get invited to the tournament that is going to be held in their very own state. We'll see if Indiana can make their way into the dance. The North Carolina Tar Heels are in big danger of missing the tournament for the first time since 2010. Now, I have watched Carolina play maybe twice this year, and I've noticed a trend. They're not great offensively, so they have to work harder offensively. You've got to run your offense a little bit longer. You've got to push pace and try to get some easy baskets, or you've got to crash the offensive boards and get those putbacks that we know can be so valuable. When they do those things, the North Carolina Tar Heels can be a problem. I mean, on Saturday, they curb stomped Louisville. They beat them by almost 50 points. Why? Because they pushed the pace. They attacked the offensive glass. They played hard. But when North Carolina doesn't play that way, when they're kind of soft, when they're kind of lazy, they can lose to Georgia Tech. Roy Williams has some work to do to get his team even into the tournament this year. Kind of sounds weird. But North Carolina might be out this year. And I hate to just pick on the ACC. And the only reason that I am is probably because they have such big names that are actually on the bubble. But we do have one more Atlantic Coast team that is finding themselves squarely on the bubble. Because the Syracuse Orange right now, I would say right now they're not in and maybe going to fall out. I would say they're out and they need to play their way in. Because after starting the season 6-1, Jim Boeheim's Syracuse team, they're just kind of the epitome of inconsistency. They lose to Pittsburgh. They lose to North Carolina. They lose to Clemson. They were down over the weekend big to Notre Dame in the first half of their game. And Notre Dame is not a great team this year. If you lose that game, I honestly think Syracuse is done. They would be out and they wouldn't be able to play their way in. But they found a way to come back and beat Notre Dame. So Syracuse is another team. They have some really important games down the stretch. If they want to dance, they're going to have to win those games, and they're probably going to have to make at least a little bit of noise in the ACC tournament, or Syracuse could be on the outside. Now, we just named some pretty blue blood programs. Syracuse, Duke, North Carolina, Indiana. They're on the bubble. But remember this. Remember that as much as the NCAA tournament committee says that they don't pay attention to the name on the line when they create the tournament, you just watch how many of the teams I just named that will get in over teams that probably have a more deserving resume, but probably don't have as big of a brand name. The committee tells us every year, brand name doesn't matter. We don't even look at the name. But I'm going to go ahead and call my shot early. They always will pick brand names over non-brand names. I mean, who are you going to believe? The NCAA committee or your own lying eyes? We know they love the brand names. Don't be surprised when Duke, Indiana, Syracuse, and UNC all get a bid this year, because that is what the NCAA committee usually does. They put in bigger names over sometimes more deserving schools. I realize NCAA basketball this year feels kind of weird. With the tournament being canceled last year, I think it kind of left everyone with a bad taste in their mouth. Like, well, are they just going to cancel it again this year? Like, should I even get wrapped up in it? But I'm telling you, it sounds like it is going to happen. And I actually do think there are some really good teams. There are some really good players that are going to be playing their guts out in March Madness. March Madness is still going to be fun. We're still going to have Cinderella teams. We're still going to have buzzer beaters. Get ready, because the madness is coming, and after missing it last year, I can't wait for the tournament to begin this year. Now, as we do on so many weeks, maybe not every week, but like a lot of weeks we do, we need to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, today on The Dose, we have been doing a very brief preview of the NCAA tournament, which is coming fast. But it is nearly March now, which also means that many high school basketball state tournaments are going to be getting started soon too. Now, maybe you played high school basketball. Maybe you coached high school basketball. Maybe you went to a big time basketball school and you were just a fan. Or maybe you are even a high school player right now and you have dreams of someday, maybe you could play in the NBA yourself. Well, today, I am going to help that dream become a reality. Okay, not really. But I can at least tell you about which high school would raise your odds of making it to the NBA. Because today, our Daily Dose Top 5 counts down the 5 high schools that have produced the most players that have eventually made it to the National Basketball Association. I'm telling you right now, we have some impressive schools on our list today. We start off at number 5, and we go to the town of Chatham, Virginia. It's actually about 2 hours away from Charlotte, where we arrive at a school by the name of the Hargrave Military Academy. Now, the school is a boarding academy, and it's actually known, of course, for its military program, which is kind of similar to like an army prep school. Oh, and also, they produce big-time, world-class athletes. It's not just basketball. They actually do it in a number of different sports. Hargrave is one of 3 schools on this list that is actually one of the top NFL players produced as well at their school. And unlike its football program, their basketball program still allows for postgraduates to come into their program. In fact, all of the school's NBA players come from that postgraduate program. Got kids that are a little bit smarter. Got kids that are a little bit wiser. They're more mature. But the Hargrave Military Academy Tigers have produced a pretty respectable list of NBA players. You might recognize a few of these names. Current LA Laker Montrezl Harrell went to Hargrave. Current Charlotte Hornet Terry Rozier played at Hargrave. So did Joe Alexander, David West, Josh Howard, Maurice Spates, Lonnie Baxter, Lorenzo Brown, Sherrod Ford, PJ Harrison, Vernon Macklin. All together, the Hargrave Military Academy Tigers have sent 14 players from their high school to the NBA. And for that, they are good enough to be number 5 on our list today. We move next to number 4. And we go a little bit north to the small state of New Hampshire. Well, I mean, what NBA players are coming out of New Hampshire? Well, get this. 28 players have actually gone from a New Hampshire high school to the NBA. And half of them all came from the exact same school. Because the Brewster Academy Bobcats are located in Wolfboro, New Hampshire. And they are another boarding school. And I'm telling you right now. You want to go to Brewster? You better have some money. It's not cheap. The school's tuition is $62,000 a year, making it the most expensive school in the state of New Hampshire and one of the most expensive schools in the United States, period. They have world-class facilities at Brewster. And of course, that is one of the biggest drawing points for prospective students. They've got a 50,000 square foot athletic center. They've got indoor and outdoor turf fields. They've got a boathouse. They have a rowing tank. They have a climbing wall. But the school also boasts a really impressive basketball player resume. In fact, 7 current NBA players played their high school ball at Brewster Academy, including Utah Jazz guard Donovan Mitchell, Denver Nuggets guard Will Barton, and Indiana Pacer TJ Warren. But that's not all. Devontae Graham, Thomas Robinson, Jeff Adrian, Jonah Bolden, Craig Brackens, Marcus Derrickson, they all attended Brewster Academy. Brewster doesn't just play basketball. They win. And they win a lot. The boys' prep basketball team has won the National Prep School Championship 7 different times. The Brewster Bobcats come in today on our list at number 4. We move on to number 3. And if you follow high school hoops much at all, then you will know our number 3 entry. Because they have been a basketball power for decades. It's not recent. They've been doing it for a long time. In fact, again, it's not just basketball. This school actually has a really, really good football program too. And they have twice been named the number 2 high school athletic program in the country. Again, not one sport. Multiple sports. They are located just outside of Washington, D.C. in Hyattsville, Maryland, even though the school actually attracts students, of course, from all over the D.C. area. At least one alum of our number 3 entry school has been playing in the NBA for 48 of the past 50 seasons. That's how good the players are that go to this school. This school hasn't just sent players to the league. They have sent really, really good players to the league. The DeMatha Catholic Stags have had a Hall of Famer in Adrian Dantley, a current All-Star in Victor Oladipo, and a recent number 1 overall NBA draft pick in Markelle Fultz. Yes, I know Fultz didn't really turn out like we thought, but I'm telling you, DeMatha has an impressive list. Jeremy and Jerrion Grant both went there. Johnny Austin, Keith Bogans, Adrian Branch, Kenny Carr, Danny Ferry, Joseph Forte, Johnny Jones, Sidney Lowe, they all went to DeMatha High School. Of course, it does help that Morgan Wooten was the school's former longtime basketball coach. He's one of the greatest high school coaches ever. He coached the team to 5 national championships, and back in 2000, he was inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. The DeMatha Stags are really, really good, but they come in at number 3 today on our list. We move on to number 2. And I know that it's kind of fun these days to kind of point and laugh at New York basketball. I mean, the Knicks have been terrible for years, even though they're kind of being a little scrappy this year. St. John's, they're not what they used to be. Columbia, no. Cornell, St. Bonaventure, Stony Brook, Wagner, they all used to boast some big-time college basketball, and now they've fallen off quite a bit. We even talked about Syracuse earlier in the program. They're not exactly what they used to be. New York used to be a hotbed of basketball talent. Well, back when New York was king, they also had a really, really good high school hoops program back there, because the DeWitt Clinton Governors are actually located in the Bronx in New York, and DeWitt Clinton was formerly the biggest high school in the world back in the 30s. Their student body at the time exceeded, get ready for this, 12,000 kids in it. Now, the modern day student body numbers are down from then, but they still have around 4,000 students every year. Well, when you had 12,000 students in your school, it's no wonder that DeWitt Clinton got some pretty good players, and they sent some really good players on to the NBA. Yes, the names might be a little bit older, but they do still have a lot of talent that has come out of DeWitt Clinton. They had quite the pool to choose from. I mean, they sent two Hall of Famers to the NBA. Tiny Archibald went to DeWitt. Dolph Schayes went to DeWitt. So did Tommy Burns, Leo Gottlieb, Luther Green, Jerry Harkness, Tom Henderson, Butch Lee, Billy Reid, Steve Shepard, Oliver Taylor. They were all former governors. And you know what's interesting about DeWitt Clinton? It's not just basketball. Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley went there. Comic book publisher Stan Lee went there. Actors Don Adams and Burt Lancaster all attended DeWitt Clinton, and DeWitt Clinton comes in today at number two. So we reach number one on our list of high schools that have sent the most players to the NBA. And you know, sometimes when we do the Daily Dose Top 5, it's kind of close between 4 and 5. Saw that today. It's kind of close between 4 and 3. Kind of close between 3 and 2. Kind of close between 2 and 1. But that is not the case today. Because think about our top 5 today. Hargrave came in at number 5. They had 14 players. At 4, Brewster Academy had 14 players. At 3 and 2, we had DeMatha and DeWitt Clinton. They both sent 18 players. Our number one team, they have sent 33 players to the NBA. Oak Hill Academy is a co-ed, private, Baptist-affiliated Christian secondary school in Mouth of Wilson, Virginia. Oak Hill's enrollment is only around 150 students. It's a boarding school. They serve grades 8 through 12, and high school basketball players come to Oak Hill from all over the country because they know there is no better place to prepare you for the next level. You want to go to the NBA? Well, you might want to start your career by being at Oak Academy, because the Oak Academy Warriors are really, really good at making NBA players. Players have moved from all over the country to go to Oak Hill. Carmelo Anthony moved from Baltimore to attend Oak Hill. Okay, that's not that far. Rajon Rondo came from Louisville, Kentucky to go to Oak Hill. Brandon Jennings moved from Compton, California to go to Oak Hill. And Steve Blake went to Oak Hill from Miami, Florida. And that's just a few of the guys that have gone to Oak Hill. Check out this list of former Oak Hill players. Quinn Cook, Josh Smith, Jerry Stackhouse, Ty Lawson, Jordan Adams, Corey Alexander, William Avery, Mark Blunt, Sean Green, Steven Jackson, Jeff McInnes, Ron Mercer, John Reeves, Nolan Smith, Rod Strickland, Sindarius Thornwell, Kevin Durant was actually there briefly, Michael Beasley, Marcus Williams, Troy Williams. Telling you right now, Oak Hill sends more kids to the NBA than most colleges do. Oak Hill has been named the national high school champion 9 different times under head coach Steve Smith, and they have also produced 28 McDonald's All-Americans. This week on the Daily Dose Top 5, our number one entry, yeah, it's not that close, because the Oak Hill Academy Warriors are absolutely dominating the competition. If you want to get to the NBA, here's some real easy advice for you. Go to Oak Hill. It'd be a really good place to start. I'll just warn you, it's not going to be that easy to get into. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are slowly turning our attention from football to basketball here at The Dose, and we may need to check in just a little bit on the NBA. Talked about it earlier, the All-Star break is coming. We're getting close to that kind of midway point at the season. Might have to talk a little bit about that. Plus, we'll have news. We'll probably have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you, so make sure you stop by and make sure you tell a friend to do the same. Hey, I have to say thanks to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails, for the texts, for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to that YouTube channel. Thank you for giving us positive ratings wherever it is that you watch or listen. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.